This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation on the evolving role of today's Chief Information Officer. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. How has the role of CIO changed over the last decade, and why? What are some of the key challenges facing both private sector and public sector CIOs? How has information technology transformed how organizations operate? And what does the future hold for those leading information technology efforts? We will explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Harvey Kappel, Executive Director of the Center for CIO Leadership. Harvey, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure having you.
Thank you, Michael. It's wonderful to be here today.
Harvey, I want to get a sense. Could you outline the mission of the Center for CIO Leadership? What is it trying to accomplish?
Sure. The center has as its mission to create a global community to advance the CIO profession. And really what we mean by that is to help CIOs to evolve their role, which in many cases is very tactical, very heads down, very operational, largely focused on expense reduction, which is a fine and noble goal, of course. But what we see is a lot of business value, frankly, being left on the table by not being able to leverage IT in more innovative and strategic ways to look at how to use technology to drive top-line revenue, to deliver sustainable business value, to be full peers, business partners, leaders at the enterprise level, driving business well beyond what most CIOs currently do. So that's really the mission of the Center for CIO Leadership.
So a very timely mission, an important mission. What are the ways you work to achieve that mission? What are some of the things you're doing with the community?
It's a great question. First of all, let me just share with our listeners that the community itself is made up of about 2,700 members. It's a very global community. In fact, the global nature of what we do is a very important aspect. Essentially, we do research, so we're constantly listening to the needs of the CIO community, what their challenges are, what their opportunities may be. We're then helping them to assess where they are in the maturity cycle, if you will, of their own development and their place within the enterprise in order to be able to leverage technology in some of the ways we've talked about. And then, frankly, based on those conversations, based on our understanding of those needs and the gaps, we partner with a series of world-class educators, academic partners, learning partners to deliver education back to the CIOs. I should be clear, education for us is not about necessarily sitting in a classroom. A lot of our education is online. A lot of it is in the form of webinars or online roundtables, as we call them, or in-person salons, or conversations just like the one we're having today. Where we find that CIOs get an enormous value from simply interacting with their peers and understanding what someone in their shoes has done before them or how someone has solved a certain problem or overcome a certain challenge.
So what are some of the key research areas you're interested in?
One of the first research projects, in fact, we did was to create what we call our competency model. Mm-hmm. Given the mission that I described earlier, what we felt was absolutely key was to be able to define the archetype for this new role of CIO. We've now come to call that role the business savvy CIO, by the way. The competency model that we developed, and again, this was based on primary research that we did with our academic partners, with our research partners, with industry partners across our community, consists of four key competencies. First and foremost, leadership clearly comes from the name of our center. The next is about all about business strategy and process. The next is about innovation and growth. And then finally, the fourth, and these are not necessarily in priority order, the fourth is about organization and talent management. So we have determined that in order to support this journey from a very operational, very tactical-oriented role to one that is much more concerned with leadership at the enterprise level and driving business value, in effect being a business leader who understands IT as opposed to an IT manager who's focused on the more technical aspects, these are the skills that CIOs most often talk about as needed in order to progress their career and their involvement in their enterprise along this journey. So when we do research or when we provide education or when we do a webinar or a seminar or a roundtable, whether it be about a pure technology or whether it be about strategic innovation or whether it be about what is the impact of the economic downturn on the role of CIO, those four competencies are our center of gravity, if you will. They really help us to anchor the conversations that we have, the research we do, the education we provide, so that there's consistency and continuity and defines a very clear growth path for CIOs.
What about your journey? Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got to be the executive director of the center?
Sure. I actually came from a role as CIO myself. So I can really say I've walked a mile in their shoes. In fact, I was the chief information officer for the what was called the Global Consumer Group at a, shall we say, a major Fortune 50 global money center bank. In that capacity, I managed a $2.8 billion budget. I supported 150 million customers in 54 countries. This was a giant infrastructure, 50 data centers and 35 call centers and 11,000 technology people and 70,000 operations people. So I really got a very, very good feel for not only what the role was, but what the role could be. By that, what I mean is, how do you speak to your C-suite peers? How do you have the right conversation with your CEO or with your CFO or with your CMO to really understand what the business challenges are? To us at the center, by the way, the KPI or the key performance indicator, if you will, or the critical success factor really is when there's a conversation about business strategy, having nothing to do with technology per se, are you invited to the table to participate in that conversation as a true peer, or are you handed the strategy or the plan after the fact for implementation? To us, that's the acid test. I'm pleased to say that I had the experience of sitting at the table, participating in those conversations, helping to drive the business strategy from the point of view of what technology could bring to the party and how technology could enable that strategy, and often make significant contributions because there are many things, as we know, especially within an industry like financial services, where in many cases the product or service is the technology. So they're in many ways integrally linked. So my heritage is, while it's very technical in nature, in 1976, when I wanted to see what a microcomputer was all about, they were only in kit form, and I built one. So I've always had sort of this electronics mechanical sort of bent in my life and my career, and have a real passion, really, for leveraging technology to help drive value, I think, would be the best.
And the center gives you that platform of insight and experience.
Absolutely.
And, you know. So what is, to your mind, what are the characteristics of an effective leader in an increasingly interconnected and networked world?
An effective leader needs to be one who, first and foremost, is a very good listener, who is able to step back, take himself or herself out of the equation, and in a very dispassionate way, listen to his team or his audience or her audience, or really understand what the nature of the environment is, whether it's a problem that needs to be solved or whether it's a new product that's about to be launched, or figure out how to rally a constituency in the case of public sector, but really to understand what the challenge is, so to speak. The next part of it, I think, is being able to then take that challenge or that issue or that problem and think about, is that really the symptom or the problem? because many times what appears to be the problem is only the symptom. One of my favorite quotes, by the way, which I talk about all the time, is from Henry Ford, who was quoted as saying, if I had asked my customers what they wanted, they would have said faster horses, which is a wonderful, I think, just a wonderful example of what I'm talking about. I mean, he really got to the right problem. It wasn't about faster horses. It was about better transportation, right? So I think a really good leader gets underneath the fabric, if you will, of what the external buzz is all about and helps to identify what the real problem, what the real challenge is about. And then from that, formulate a solution and then being able to articulate that solution very clearly, to be able to motivate, to be able to create a team and build the right dynamics amongst the team members and really affect a solution at the end of the day. That's really what we're here to do.
Now, do you think because we're in an interconnected world, a world that's based in a large part, our lives are touched by the internet as an example, or disruptive innovations like the cell phone, do these things require a new concept of leadership?
I think they do. I think they do because they really represent a much more expansive view of the context, if you will, that we are living in. I think it's very clear that what has happened, and it's really, I think, a combination of factors, actually. If you look at what the internet has done, it has really created the connectivity. If you look at what broadband has done on top of the internet, it has created the pathway, if you will, that enables not just text and a green screen, but the richness of communication, whether it be video, whether it be high definition or Dolby surround sound or whatever. It has really brought a richness to that kind of communication. And then I think when you add to it the whole notion of mobile technologies, whether it be a cell phone or a PDA or a notebook or a netbook or a laptop, I think all of these factors taken together have essentially allowed us to have a view of a market or a constituency that is really global, as opposed to I'm going to do something for my customers in the Northeast or even in our country, whether it be a customer-facing sales or marketing opportunity, whether it be a natural resource supply chain opportunity, whether it be a manufacturing opportunity, or actually many, many very successful examples of sourcing in one part of the world, designing in another part of the world, fabricating in another part of the world, and delivering and distributing and selling in yet another part of the world, all done remotely, electronically, using the technologies that we're talking about. I believe that those enterprises and countries, governments, that recognize those dynamics and really leverage the advantages that those dynamics bring are going to be the ones that ultimately win.
How has the role of Chief Information Officer evolved over the last decade? We will explore this topic and more with Harvey Kappel, Executive Director of the Center for CIO Leadership, when our conversation continues on the special edition of the Business of Government Hour. From contaminated peanut butter to spinach, our food safety net has shown signs of fraying, with tainted products slipping through to retail shelves, causing human harm and economic ruin. Pick up the latest Center report on food safety and find out how critical private-public partnerships are enhancing the current food safety system in America. You can order or download a free copy of this and all of our reports at businessofgovernment.org. What is risk management? How do you manage risk more effectively? How can risk management lead to better decision-making? And what about applying risk management in government? Pick up the Center's report, Managing Risk in Government, An Introduction to Enterprise Risk Management, and find out. This report is especially timely given the Obama administration's focus on accountability and transparency, which has prompted a renewed focus on proper risk management and controls. You can order or download a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, focusing on the evolving role of today's CIO. I'm your host, Michael Keegan, and our guest today is Harvey Kappel, Executive Director of the Center for CIO Leadership. Harvey, I've had the pleasure of interviewing a host of government CIOs, so I'd like to draw a comparison between public and private sector CIOs throughout our discussion going forward. You've performed extensive research to understand the evolving role of both public and private CIOs. What motivated your research, and what are some of the key trends that prompted your efforts?
Well, the motivation was, for us, actually quite simple. We believe that when you strip away the public, private, government, company veneer, the role of the CIO is actually quite consistent across, all about leadership, all about delivering value to stakeholders, whether those stakeholders be constituents in the case of public sector or government, whether those stakeholders be shareholders or employees or customers in a private sector context. The work that a CIO needs to do ultimately is very, very similar, which is all about the leveraging of technology to deliver value to stakeholders.
So what were some of the goals of your research and to better understanding the continuing evolution of CIO? Who participated in your study?
Well, one of the more recent studies, we've done a couple. One of the more recent studies we did was joint with Pepperdine University, actually out on the West Coast in Santa Clara. They actually contacted us early on in their work, understanding what the center does and how we work, and asked if we would be interested in collaborating with them. And we said, absolutely, this is exactly in the sweet spot of what we did. We worked with them on a very close basis to put together the survey protocol, if you will, the actual questionnaire. They did a draft. We helped them to revise the draft. We then helped to identify specific CIOs to participate in the research. That research was done in the form of face-to-face interviews, about 1 hour each interview. The participants for that research were CIOs at the federal government level, at the state government level, across probably 4 or 5 states out of our great 50. And I believe there were a couple of local or city government CIOs involved in that as well. The goals and objectives of that study were really to get under the covers of what we believed to be the mythology around how different these roles really are. What we were after was, are they truly different? If so, how? Where are they the same? Most importantly, how do we bring them closer together, not necessarily for the sake of making it the same, for making it the same sense, but really how can we leverage the best of the best of both worlds to share, to bridge, and to really help the CIO community in general to advance the profession in the way in which our mission is crafted, which is really about making CIOs better business people.
Would you elaborate on the business IT vision alignment model? How does it enhance our understanding and sort of better explain the evolution of the CIO today?
If we go back to the early 90s, which probably was some of the germinal seeds around internet technology, perhaps, I think the industry itself was still very much focused around what I would call middle and back office kinds of applications. It was much more operational. It was much more about inventory control or supply chain or procurement. Certainly accounting and finance were some of the early roots. But I think as that level of sophistication of technology has made possible the migration of technology more into the front office, more into the marketing and sales, more involved with analytics, more involved with externally rather than internally facing applications, there has evolved a need, frankly, for a closer integration between business and technology. I am choosing the word integration quite carefully, by the way. One of the things we look at on a regular basis is this whole notion of business and IT alignment. And frankly, I'm not sure I'm really comfortable with that terminology, because by definition, when you talk about alignment, what you're talking about are two disparate things that you're somehow trying to get back into focus or into balance with each other, which I think is helpful, but doesn't really tell the whole story or describe the full need. I think the full value of what IT can add in a business context is when there is integration of business and IT. And I'll give you a specific example. Often I speak to groups of CIOs, large and small. One of the questions I always ask the group is, how many people in the group today have or intend to have a strategic IT plan? And quite honestly, it's a trick question because most of them, of course, raise their hand. And my reaction is, gee, that's too bad. Does anybody know why I think that's too bad, which is the real question? And inevitably, there's, you know, one guy in the back that's sort of waving his hand, trying to get my attention. He said, gee, no, you know, in our company, we don't really have a strategic IT plan. We have a strategic business plan where IT is a chapter of that plan, which, of course, is music to my ears. I mean, that's the real answer to the question. And when you look at it in that way, I would not describe it as alignment. It's being part of the management team the same way that finance and accounting or HR or marketing or any of the other functions are part of the management team. Nobody talks about aligning HR with the business, for example, or aligning finance with the business. So I think IT has a ways to go, by the way. I think that we're not there yet, which is another one of the major goals and objectives of the center is to, you know, help CIOs and the industry in general to understand the dynamics and the real value associated with that progression.
From your research, what impact does organizational culture have on the role of CIO? And how does it differ? Here's really where I'm interested is, how does it differ between public sector and government CIOs?
Okay. That's a great question. And I believe the short answer is the significance of that impact is enormous in both private as well as public sector. I believe that the enormity of that impact comes from the mindset, the perception, and the attitudes of the other executive within the organization, whether it be cabinet members, whether it be legislators, whether it be the C-suite in the case of private sector. The reason being, and this is counsel that I offer to CIOs all the time, both in public and private sector, if you're a CIO who really has strong drive and passion to innovate and be strategic, in order for you as an individual and your enterprise in general to succeed in exploiting that passion and the result, the value attributed to that passion, that C-suite or that cabinet or that legislature needs to share that point of view. Mm-hmm. There are many organizations we come across, quite frankly, where the CEO and or the CFO or the COO, frankly, have the view of IT as either the black box or perhaps even a more pessimistic view as the black hole that's off in the corner. And the CIO is only as good as the last email failure. Mm-hmm. And it's, again, a very tactical point of view. And it's all about, you know, slash and burn and cut the budget by 30% because times are tough. You know, anything innovative or strategic need not apply. Now, again, I'm exaggerating a little bit to make a point. Similarly, there are many cultures, many organizations, and we're finding actually from some of our research that more and more CEOs actually are looking at the role of IT and the role of the CIO in a much more strategic and innovative ways, where many CIOs have not yet started to respond in that way. But what's really interesting is the innovation that those CEOs are looking for is not about a better widget. It's not about how many more features can we pack onto a checking account. It's about how do we innovate our business model? How do we figure out where our core competencies are and build our organization to play to those strengths? Which part of what we do is purely commodity, where it makes complete sense to simply drive the cost down, make the unit cost as low as we possibly can, where it's not a differentiator, it's not going to have a customer impact, and let's focus on those things that add value, whether it be the transportation department delivering a service to its constituency, or whether it be the shirt company that's coming up with a better shirt. The role of culture of the organization needs to be, and here's a context I would accept the term alignment. I think there, in this context, there does need to be alignment of thought and attitude around the role of IT and the role of CIO in general, and there needs to be that match.
In terms of roles and responsibilities, and I'm thinking about your latest research with Pepperdine, would you elaborate on the differences between private and public sector CIOs, and in particular government CIOs? What are some of the differences?
Sure. I think from the government perspective, a big difference is funding and how it gets created. In many cases, legislation is required in order to secure funding. One case I was dealing with, actually with the state government a few months ago, the CIOs of various agencies at the state level got together and had an idea for a shared procurement of computer services. In this case, it was about putting together several different data centers and using their respective resources as continuity of business, disaster recovery, basically a shared utility concept. There was no policy, no procedure, no law on the books that even dealt with that shared service model. And in order for those agencies to move forward with that plan, which, by the way, would have resulted in savings of tens of millions of dollars of taxpayers' money, it required a change, literally a change to legislation, in order to enable that to happen. In the case of private sector, not to say that funding is all that easy, but clearly it's not about changing a law. It's about convincing your CFO or your CEO or your line of business partner that there's business value to be accrued from whatever the program is. So it is a different dynamic. The other thing that I think is really important when looking at government compared to private sector is many government CIOs are appointed positions. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they are incumbent for as long as the individual who appointed them. So as in any job, you know, there's sort of the burn-in period, and it's the first year where you're kind of finding your way around and meeting your peers and understanding what the job is. Then is the burnout period at the end, frankly, where there's going to be a change of administration, generally a four-year period, which is generally the last year. So you really have sort of a limited window during which to really get things done. And I think those dynamics impact, in many cases, as one example, how strategic can I be? You know, and if I know I have a two-year window to get things done, chances are I'm going to be looking for the quick hits and the quick wins. And I'm certainly not going to start a five-year plan or a five-year program because chances are I'm not going to be here in the fifth year.
Actually, to that point, when you look at the private sector, and I don't know if you have looked at this particular longevity.
Yes.
How long do you usually see the average of a CIO in a private sector situation?
The numbers have changed, interestingly enough, as one of, I think, the positive impacts, actually, of the economic downturn of the last couple of years. I think if you go back to 2006, 2007, sort of pre-economic downturn days, you know, depending on whose research, you'd see different numbers, but generally anywhere between 18 to 24 months, actually, was the average tenure. Now what has happened, though, and it'll be interesting to see if this starts to change back as we see to be climbing out of some of the doldrum, at least. Recent research is now starting to show that 18 to 24 months has extended to 36, 48 months. So the longevity seems to be increasing.
But it's more of a factor of the economy and situation.
It seems to be, but we'll see. I think as the economy comes back, we'll see what the real impact
of
it is.
Speaking of the economy and the situation that we're in right now, what are some of the key challenges facing both public sector and private sector CIOs, and what are some of the opportunities presented by those challenges?
Immense. If you look at Chinese calligraphy, you see the word challenge and opportunity. The calligraphy is only one little stroke different, which is interesting all by itself. Challenge clearly is funding. Again, going back to the strategic versus the tactical, both in government and in private sector, there is a large, large temptation to simply slash and burn, cut the budget 30%, 40%. I mean, you know, IT is a very easy target in that respect. Nobody really understands it anyway. So interestingly enough, those same economic issues also create huge opportunities for those C-suite executives or government leaders that understand that because, I guess you could say, desperate times call for desperate measures, there are many conversations that are now being driven by business leaders that 5 years ago CIOs tried to have that were literally falling on deaf ears that have now come full circle. So I'll give you an example. This one happens to be a private sector example, but I don't think it's any different. Right? 5 years ago, if you had gone to and I'll use financial services because that's one I'm familiar with. If you had gone to the head of credit card, you had gone to the head of auto loan, the head of mortgage, and the head of student loan and said, why do we have to have five loan systems? Why can't we have one loan system we can all share and just think how much we can save and we can time to market will be much shorter, we'll have much greater customer satisfaction, and all good things will happen. And typically the response would be, what are you talking about? Get out of my office. I'm responsible for P&L. In order for me to be responsible for that P&L, I got to control my own resources and shared utility. What's that all about anyway? And all that means to me is higher prices and lower service levels, and I don't even want to have that conversation. Now, what's happened with the economic downturn, and we have seen many cases of this, those same business leaders are now initiating those conversations and coming to their CIOs and asking that very same question. Why do we have to have four loan systems? Why can't we have just one? So it's a very interesting turn of events, obviously driven by circumstance, but what it represents to the CIO is the opportunity to step into a leadership role, to be able to take on these kinds of projects and challenges that they didn't have the opportunity to do before and really demonstrate enormous business value in the end, to really show how that streamlining, that standardization can not only save money, but create better product, shorter time to market, increased customer satisfaction, and ultimately everybody wins.
So speaking of somebody who seizes that moment, you would say that that person would be successful, right? So what are the key competencies? You've alluded to them earlier, yeah, of a successful CIO. And more particularly, if there are gaps from what you see, how does a center look to maybe close those gaps? Or what are some of the recommendations for closing those gaps?
Great question. Actually, one of our areas of major focus for this year has been all about what we call communicating business value. So it's, I alluded to this a little bit earlier, is, you know, how do you have the right conversation, right? And frankly, that conversation changes, right? You need to understand how to speak the language of finance to the CFO, whether it be about ROI, return on investment, whether it be about earnings per share, whether it be about operating leverage, whatever the metrics or the key performance indicators are that CFOs are interested in. You need to be able to have that conversation and literally sell that idea, if you will, to get the funding, to get the authorizations to proceed in that person's language. When you talk to the heads of business about taking four platforms and consolidating into one platform, you need to be able to talk their language, which is about revenue growth. It's about customer retention. It's about customer satisfaction. It's about upsell. It's about cross-sell. It's the things that lines of business heads care about. So much of what CIOs need to learn, and this, by the way, is by their own acknowledgement. This is, we did not invent coffee here. This was a direct result of research that we did, really requires of CIOs the ability to understand who their peers and constituents are and be able to communicate and articulate the advantages, the benefits of whatever the program might be in very clear terms that their constituents can understand. And that's, as I mentioned, a major focus of what we're doing. At the end of the day, frankly, it's all about credibility. It's about trust. It's about confidence. It's about being invited to the table. And you simply don't achieve those things without being able to have a common language to speak to your peers within.
To what extent has the CIO emerged as a leader of innovation? We will ask Harvey Capel, Executive Director of the Center for CIO Leadership, when our conversation continues on this special edition of the Business of Government Hour. The term cloud computing is suddenly everywhere, with government leaders, industry executives, and the press all talking excitedly about this new concept. Moving to the Cloud, An Introduction to Cloud Computing and Government by David Wild examines both the interest in and the technology surrounding cloud computing and why it is receiving such increased attention. It tackles such questions as, what is cloud computing? What are some of the top challenges facing government leaders pursuing cloud computing strategies? You can order or download a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. As society has become increasingly dependent on information technology in government, business, and in our personal lives, safeguarding private information created or shared on computers or the internet has taken on greater significance. How do you keep information secure in an increasingly interconnected and networked world? What is cybersecurity? Pick up the latest Center report, Cybersecurity Management in the States, and find out. You can order or download a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, focusing on the evolving role of today's CIO. I'm your host, Michael Keegan, and our guest today is Harvey Capel, Executive Director of the Center for CIO Leadership. Increasingly, governments are becoming more adept at using data analytics to generate better insights and translate those insights into actions. What role does information technology and the CIO play in leveraging the use of analytics?
Oh, I think it's an enormous role. Again, it's an opportunity for the CIO to really step into a leadership role, understand, first of all, how to acquire and manage the data, because after all, in most cases, data is coming from disparate sources and doesn't always align, and some is at a federal level and some may be at a state level, and often apples and oranges in plain English that need to be normalized before they can even be used. Again, the CIO needs to understand the business of government in this case to be able to normalize that data in useful ways. But probably equally important is then how is it going to be used and how can it be brought to market, so to speak, to the benefit of the constituents that they serve ultimately is the real driver and the importance of that data.
The Obama administration has placed emphasis on making government more transparent, open, and leveraging technology to do that. Some have claimed that open government will drive innovation. Are there any private sector parallels to this kind of movement?
There definitely are, and I think that this question in particular is fascinating to me personally, because I think that this whole trend driven by open, collaborative, and participative government has the potential to very significantly disintermediate the whole business of IT. Let me answer your question, and then we'll come back to that in a moment. But in the private sector, what we are seeing is the use of crowdsourcing and collaborative innovation platforms being deployed, some very, very successfully, in this case for commercial application. So I'll give you an example. A large software company uses a platform to essentially offer challenges to its customer base, tens of thousands of customers globally. The company puts a $10,000 reward on a website offering a monetary prize to the customer that submits the best 5-minute video on how they used this vendor's platform to innovate or streamline their business process. Well, what happened? Within 3 months, they got thousands of responses back. The challenge for them, of course, was sifting through the responses. But let's, for argument's sake, say they got 4,000 responses and 2,000 of them were throwaways. That was 2,000 ideas left on the table that were phenomenal ideas. They paid $10,000 for results achieved in a couple of months' time and probably have their product plan laid out for the next 10 years in a few weeks for $10,000 expense. Let's compare that with the old way, quote unquote, of doing it, which is you bring in the consultants, you bring in the marketing people, you bring in the advertising people. $1 million and 9 months or a year later, maybe you have one or two interesting ideas. So what's happening is through this, in this case, is sort of a combination of online collaboration as well as this crowdsourcing technique, this particular software company was able to literally revolutionize the way they do product design, product enhancement, and go to market with their products. Let me get back to my earlier point. I think this whole phenomenon of transparency through data delivery is starting to impact the software business in some very fundamental ways. Driven in the public sector, by the way, what you see are essentially governments publishing tables of information and challenging the citizenry to write applications to leverage that data. So I'll use New York City as an example. It happens to be where I live. Don't know if you've seen the website NYC Big Apps, but it's definitely worth a visit if you haven't seen it. Essentially, what New York did was they created a contest, and they published data from the Parks Department, from the Taxi and Limousine Commission, from the Health Department, from the Transportation Department, and essentially challenged people and again offered monetary prizes for the people that could create the best software for this particular information. So here's a perfect example. They published a table of the Taxi and Limousine Commission publishes a table of every taxi medallion issued in force in New York City. It's about 50,000 of them. Somebody writes an application that goes on your PDA or your cell phone. You get in a taxi, you key in the medallion number, you then have a menu of two choices. Read comments or leave a comment. So what is now being created is a industry self-regulating technique to manage the taxi industry developed by a citizen, essentially. I think that one may have won a prize. I'm not even sure. I don't remember. But if it was a couple of $1,000s. And everybody bet. It's the win-win-win scenario. But what's important here is where we used to be driven by process or application, and people would literally pay millions of dollars for license fees and usage of applications where the data was incidental. Now what we're seeing is the data is driving, and the monetary value attributed to the actual application software is almost zero.
Yeah, and at the federal level, you have data.gov.
Absolutely.
Which is all there. Also, the prize, the competition parallel for the public sector, I had the pleasure of interviewing Dr. Bobby Braun, who is the chief technologist at NASA.
Yes,
and they are pretty much the model that the administration would like to use going forward in terms of creating this innovation through prize money and what have you. So there is it's a very interesting.
It's enormous. Many cities
changes. I mean.
Many cities are using these collaborative innovation and crowdsourcing types of techniques to solve problems like traffic congestion. And you see that not just in the U.S., you see that happening globally. And they're real fundamental infrastructure level issues that are both technical but also societal and cultural. And I mean, what could affect you more than the traffic in the city that you live in that you're trying to drive through on a daily basis? And the citizens are actually now starting to participate in finding solutions to those very, very difficult problems at almost no cost.
Yeah, a co-production strategy almost.
Exactly.
So this is a great segue into, in some quarters, there's a perception that the government lags behind the private sector in technology innovation. First, given your research, do you think this perception is accurate? And second, how do you think government can enhance its position?
I think perhaps it may have been accurate 20 or 30 years ago, but that has definitely changed. I think when you look at some of the work that's been doing in these publication of data and crowdsourcing and innovative kinds of champion challenger model development techniques, I think in many ways the public sector and the government is starting to pull ahead even of the private sector. Interestingly enough, I would actually kind of raise the bar on the conversation a little bit. I would extend the technologies that we're talking about to most of what we typically talk about as Web 2.0 or social media kinds of technologies as a class in general. When you look at the ability to reach a constituency or communicate with a large group of people in real time, the government is certainly way ahead. Again, going back to New York State, actually the CIO of the state legislature is a colleague and friend, and recently has developed an application that literally allows citizens of New York to not only look at work in process on bills before the state legislature, but actually comment back to the legislators on their point of view and their opinion about that bill. So, I mean, just leveraging the constituency input in that way could be a phenomenal, phenomenal advance to the quality and the relevance of the legislation that's happening there.
So with that, to what extent has the CIO the role, the person, the individual, emerges as a leader of innovation?
Again, I think it's tough to answer in a one-size-fits-all, but certainly the opportunity is there. We are definitely seeing more and more examples of CIOs that are emerging. I think 5 years ago or 3 years ago, it was not uncommon to hear CIOs sort of in the back room talk about how CIO really stands for career is over, given all the dynamics and frankly the risk and the 24/7 nature of it, and you know, you're only as good as your last email failure and you know, all of that. I think more and more, not only CIOs but executives in general are starting to realize the not only the importance but the criticality, the competitive differentiators that technology brings. And I think the CIO profession in general is at a real turning point in that sense. I think many CIOs understand the potential, many CXOs understand the potential, and the real struggle now, the real challenge, if you will, and the opportunity is how do we get there? Okay, we understand the archetype. We understand this thing called business savvy CIO. We really want to be business savvy CIOs. Help us. How do we get there? And that's really what the Center for CIO Leadership is all about. That's why we were created and that's what we do.
So I just had a question, just getting terminology correct and understanding what exactly certain roles are. So we have the C-suite. And what is the difference between a CIO and a CTO, a chief technology officer?
Chief technology officer. Yeah, it's a wonderful question as well. Well, let me start by saying, based on our research again, if you ask 12 people to please define the role of CIO, you'll get 12 different answers. If you ask 12 people, same or different, please define what is the role of a chief technology officer, you'll get 12 different answers again. And if you ask 12 people, maybe the same 12, maybe yet a different set of 12, what are the differences? You'll get 12 different answers again. That said, I think that sort of in a general way, the CTO role, by the way, I think came with the evolution of the internet technology. I think what one of the silver linings in the dark cloud of the dot-com bust, boom and bust, was the emergence of that role as a person who understood the technology and understood the product and understood how to make, you know, connective tissue between developing the technology as the product, as many websites are. Really, you can't separate the technology piece from the product piece. The role of CIO, I think, is in many ways a little more broad, a little more concerned with not just the specifics of the technology and the specifics of the product, but equally concerned with how do we as an enterprise now leverage that product? How do we satisfy our customers? How does this product combine and integrate with other products and services that we're offering? It's more of an end-to-end view, I guess, of the enterprise and how it works and how, in many cases, it may not work, and how do we fix those things? So it's a little more of an operating role. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, I've seen organizations, by the way, where the CTO reports to a CIO, A CIO may have multiple CTOs reporting in. I've seen other organizations where the two are parallel and somewhat independent of each other. I'm not sure I've ever seen a CIO reporting to a CTO. There are definitely organizations where there's a CTO and no CIO. Mm-hmm. So you know, I think the industry itself probably could benefit from a little more rigorous definition of some of these roles.
How can private and public sector CIO communities increase collaboration? We will ask Harvey Capel, Executive Director of the Center for CIO Leadership, when our conversation continues on this special edition of the Business of Government Hour. Management of government projects, programs, and portfolios, and the related expenditures of public funds are major visible areas of interest and concern. Despite a growing stream of successful program and projects, failures continue at an alarming rate. Pick up the latest Center report, Project Management in Government, An Introduction to Earned Value Management, and find out how this powerful methodology can make your projects more successful. You can order or download a free copy of this and all of our Center reports at businessofgovernment.org. Whether it's the federal government's role in emergency management, its efforts in making operations more sustainable, responsible, and efficient, or the challenges being faced and innovations being forged by local governments during difficult economic times, the Spring 2010 edition of the Business of Government magazine offers timely, relevant, and thoughtful perspectives on all of these issues from leading practitioners and public managers. Hi, I'm Michael Keegan, Managing Editor of the Business of Government magazine, and we know it's all about making connections, introducing our readers and connecting them to the work of government executives who are leading agencies or initiatives that are focused on critical missions, missions important to them. In our latest edition of the Spring 2010 Business of Government magazine, we bring you conversations with FEMA Administrator Craig Fugate, who talks to us about the challenges facing his agency. Michelle Moore, Federal Environmental Executive, outlines sustainability efforts and greening federal operations. And Robert Doerr, Commissioner of the New York City Human Resources Administration, sheds light on how his agency is doing more with less. Our forum is dedicated to exploring ways government leaders and all leaders can make better decisions. All of this and so much more in the Spring 2010 edition of the Business of Government magazine. Order your free copy at businessofgovernment.org and find out how the business of government is not business as usual. Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, focusing on the evolving role of today's CIO. I'm your host, Michael Keegan, and our guest today is Harvey Capel, Executive Director of the Center for CIO Leadership. Harvey, what are some of the trends being pursued to attract and retain IT professionals, and what are some of the challenges with succession planning, and how do these challenges differ, as far as you can tell, as far as your research can tell, between private sector and public sector?
Wonderful question. First of all, the whole issue of organization and talent management, I think, is absolutely vital to the success of a CIO in building and leading the right organization. Part of that, the fabric of that success, if you will, and actually one of the questions we always get when we speak with CIOs is, okay, I get this strategy stuff and I get this business partnership stuff, but I got to tell you, I'm 24/7 heads down making sure the systems are up and running and making sure the lands and the WANs are running. And you know, I don't really have the time to fool around with this innovation and strategy and whatever. And typically my response is, well, what bench strength do you have? You know, do you have people underneath you within your organization that you can delegate to? Do you, in fact, yourself have the right delegation skills to be able to know what's appropriate to delegate to free yourself? Basically, the goal is to free yourself up, to make the time to be able to see the important part of your role as dealing much more frequently and much more in depth with your business partners or your constituencies, whether it be public or private sector. And that's all about having the right bench strength, having the right skills beneath you so that you can sleep at night knowing that the more tactical operational things are taken care of and that you can then spend the time understanding the business challenges and the business problems and figuring out now how to advance the technology agenda in harmony with that business agenda, not aligned, but in harmony with. So that part of it is actually key. When we do our research and we ask CIOs, do you in fact have a talent plan? Do you in fact have a succession plan? More than two-thirds of them report the fact that they absolutely agree, we know we have to have one. About a third actually do, which to me is huge opportunity, because that means that two-thirds don't, and that means that two-thirds need to be able to develop those talent management plans and to develop those succession plans. Again, everybody kind of understands, I know I need to do it. It's kind of like in the IT industry, documentation. Yeah, you know, everybody knows you got to do documentation. It's always the last thing on the project plan, and it's always the first thing to get cut, right? From an HR perspective, unfortunately, you know, things like succession plans, things like organizational development plans tend to be kind of put as a second priority. But in fact, I think many CIOs could benefit from focusing more in those areas to be able, as I said, to build the bench strength, to free themselves up and make the time and to reallocate their focus and priorities to step into some of these more leadership type roles that we've been talking about.
Well, Harvey, I've really enjoyed our conversation today. And in particular, I hope it provided a different perspective for our listeners, because as I said earlier, I've had the pleasure of interviewing some really dedicated government CIOs. And I really want to get a sense from your perspective. Are there opportunities for increased collaboration and partnership between public and private sector CIO and the community at large?
Oh, I think there are. I mean, I think we have seen great success at the Center for CIO Leadership in terms of connecting both public and private sector CIOs in the same. Used to be you would go to an event and it would be for public sector, or you'd go to an event and it would be for private sector. And more we are both seeing, and we are also initiating ourselves, events that commingle both public and private sector. And it is very clear that learnings can be shared, opportunities can be shared. And frankly, there's a tremendous amount to be learned in both directions. In the case of public to private, some of these social networking, Web 2.0, collaborative innovation kinds of spaces, I think in many cases, the private sector certainly has many advantages around sort of the project management, some of the administrative aspects, the budgeting aspects, the planning aspects, the execution aspects, where, you know, frankly, there are not legal constraints, as we had discussed a little bit earlier, where I think there's a lot of benefit that can be accrued, as well as talent management and sharing as well, by the way. That's one of the other silver linings in the dark cloud of this economic downturn, which has been clearly quite tragic for many people that are unfortunately out of work. But on the other hand, the labor pool that is currently available to both the public sector and the private sector is probably better than it's been in 25 years.
Harvey, thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate your time and your perspective, and I hope our audience really learns a lot about the parallels between the private sector and the public sector from the evolving role of CIOs.
It's been absolutely my pleasure, Michael. It's been great to talk to you, and I share your hope that our audience has gotten a lot out of our conversation today, and happy to follow up with you or with anybody from your audience at any point in the future.
How can folks get in touch with your center?
Easiest way is to go to our website. It is cioleadershipcenter.com, and you can take advantage of the tremendous archive of research and educational content, a lot of which I've talked about today. Be happy to be in touch with any of your audience members. You can contact me directly through the center's website as well.
Wonderful. Thanks, Harry.
My pleasure, Michael. Thank you.
This has been a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Harvey Kappel, Executive Director of the Center for CIO Leadership. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.
How is the U.S. Navy evolving its information capabilities? What is the Naval Information Dominance Strategy? How is the U.S. Navy introducing bold, game-changing strategies and concepts for the next generation? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these and other questions with Vice Admiral Jack Dorsett, Deputy Chief of Naval Operations for Information Dominance and Director of Naval Intelligence, next week. That's next week on The Business of Government Hour.